Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Bard's Logic, Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation and part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network on Facebook if you are a Facebook user. And that you can find easily by going to the search engine and just put Patriot Journalist Network, where you could find other shows besides this one, such as the Mark Prasik Show, which is Full Armor, which you can find on Monday through Friday from 8 p.m. to midnight Eastern time. Now, tonight, members of the Bard's Logic Political Talk panel will talk about the strategy for 2012 and beyond, talking about topics such as the Democrat-Republican duopoly, down ballots, such as state, local, city, district, and sheriff positions, ballot access, and a way for victory for liberty, freedom, and we the people. Now, at this time, I will be letting in one of the members of the panel tonight, and that is Chris. And so, Chris, I'm getting ready to open up your mic.
Hey, how you doing tonight,
hey,
Robert?
Chris. I'm good. How about you?
Great. Great.
Excuse me.
I'm ready to rock and roll. Where's my sidekick?
Your compatriot. Well, we do have someone on the call-in, and let's see if that is Rex. If not, we will hold on for Rex because we will be taking calls after
later.
The information, of course, later. So let me open this up. Maybe this is just a new number for Rex. And this is a new area code. Is this Rex?
I think it's Gene.
Gene? Okay, Gene. Well, thank you very much for calling in. We're going to have some Q&A for Rex and Chris here tonight, and then we'll be opening up the call for others. Does that sound good to you?
That's fine.
Okay, great. Well, I appreciate you for calling in, and we'll continue and wait for Rex to show up. Hopefully he is well and the rest of his folks. So I will, mute the mic, and then we will continue on with things as scheduled. So what we have here tonight is we are going to discuss, as I said, strategy and some of the parties. And quickly, some of the things we're going to talk about first is the number of ballots and how many possible electoral college votes that each of these three parties could possibly. First, we'll start with the Libertarian Party, which is on 48 ballots, or ballots in 49 states, with one state pending, Pennsylvania, which will be a write-in, regardless of the outcome, which comes out to having about 569 it says 569 down ballot candidates, with the possibility of 531 current electoral vote access. And then we have the Constitution Party, which is on the ballot or write-in in 46 states, with two states still pending, and they have 111 down ballot candidates in 15 states, and their current electoral access, although they're still petitioning New York and Kentucky, which is Kentucky with 13 electors. Currently, the Constitution Party has about 508 current electoral access for votes. And then we have the Americans Party, and that is, to the best of our knowledge, he is on the ballot in California, Colorado, and Florida, so he's on three state ballots, and has write-in status in Alabama, Idaho, Iowa, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Virginia, which is 10 states. And at this time, we do not have any information on any down ballot tickets. I'm not sure if they do. And their current electoral access would be a maximum of 170 electoral college. Now, on to Ron Paul. He is only legally able to be voted for in 10 in the 10 no rules write-in states. But I see that somehow they did get him on the ballot in Maine. You know, he's possibly one of the, we've seen how the convention went, so maybe not. But at this time, excuse me, I will begin some of the questions here. And the first one,
Robert, I don't mean to interrupt you so soon, but can I give a little bit more insight on that Ron Paul thing?
Sure, of course, go ahead.
Okay. What happened, and I'm not sure exactly because I haven't had time, you know, I've scanned over it, but somehow in the state of Maine, which is one of the states where you actually have to, typically a party, you know, a campaign has to go in and put themselves on a ballot, and Ron Paul is not doing that, to my knowledge. You know, he's kind of, you know, he kind of bowed out, you know, he's going to retire, you know what I'm saying, but his people have not given up, which is an admirable trait. And so they have this write-in Ron Paul campaign going on, and they are fighting tooth and nail. Now, somehow, whether it was the delegates, and I don't know all the details, like I said, I haven't been able to follow up on it, but they got him on the ballot in Maine. So, you know, I'm going to keep my eyes on this because he is a surefire spoiler because he's a Republican and those are Republican voters. So it's an interesting thing to keep our eyes on. That's about all I have right now. And as we go through the Q&A, hope, you know, maybe I can do a little research while we're talking. And Rex is answering questions. Rex, are you there? Anyway, go ahead, Rob.
No, Rex is not. As I said, I hope his family's okay. I haven't heard anything from him, but we'll presume everything's all right, and he just has some things going on at this time. And so what we'll do is we'll move over to you, Chris, and start off with if we could just go into your background and your journey and what has brought you to this point of researching third-party candidates.
Okay, short form, I'm the most non-political human being in this country. I can't stand politics. I can't stand politicians. Never liked them, never trusted them. Watching, you know, probably getting a little bit older in my life, you know, I started paying attention a little bit more. I think when I moved out of Alaska, you know, we had, I had access to our local AM, you know, talk radio and got to listen to my favorite so-called now traitorous conservative talk show hosts. And so, you know, I kind of educated myself over a few years' time. Then we had the Bush era, and which seemed like the Democrats were in control of our country, and then 9/11, and then things like the Patriot Act being passed. And I really started paying attention at that point in time because there was this transition in my life where I actually live in a capital city, so I'm surrounded by libs and Dems. And I would be talking to people, and they would be, you know, find out I'm a conservative, and, you know, they'd be saying, but Bush did this, Bush did that. And I found out for the first time in my life I didn't have an answer because he did do that. They did spend more money than, you know, than anybody had ever spent before. We weren't in these endless wars that seemed like they were never going to end. The Patriot Act was signed, which was like the beginning of the lighting the match, getting ready to burn the Declaration of Independence, No Child Left Behind. I mean, it was all this massive, compassionate capitalism, you know, running on a Democratic platform of let's just spend this country into oblivion. And so I became involved. And I remember the McCain-Palin debacle. And you know, first before that, I remember the Tea Party, you know, explosion. So I was like, yeah, good. You know, there's some real grassroots, real Americans, you know, rah, rah, rah. And then it kind of seemed like they were getting crushed by the left media and the RNC and the GOP, you know, the mainstream people never did. They didn't do anything to help them. They just let them get crushed. If not, they actually helped the leftists crush the Tea Party. And I started becoming more aware of things. And then, you know, we got the takeover of the House and the Senate. And a lot of people think that was because of the wars. It wasn't because of the wars. It's because of the corruption. You know, the war was just one more thing that they had to run against us on, but it was the spending. And it was the K Street lobbyist and the people going to prison and all that stuff. So anyway, then Obama just wipes the floor with McCain. You know, and that was the first primary I watched ever in my life from the actual convention forward. So this time, you know, through the last couple of years with President Obama being in power, I really started digging in going, you know, something's broken and it's really broken and it's going downhill fast and I want to find out what's going on. So that kind of brings us up to this primary. I've been involved in this primary daily since it started. You know, I picked my candidate. Newt was my candidate. I did massive research on everybody. In the early days, I didn't do enough research on Ron Paul. I have since then learned a lot about him. And I followed it day by day by day. And I started seeing, you know, I have a marketing, you know, strategic, you know, background, building organizations, developing things, you know, things like that. So I'm able to see patterns and events going on, and I started seeing this thread running to this primary very early that it didn't matter what anybody was going to do. Bottom line is the RNC and Fox News was going to make sure Romney won. And that was probably before I started investigating the corruption. But when I started investigating the corruption, that's when I really started digging in deep. And that led us all the way through the primary, through the caucuses, through the delegate selection, all the way into the RNC, which everybody's heard us talk about that at nauseam. You know, it was terrible. It was, to me, it was the death of the GOP. You know, what they did, the way they changed the rules, what they did to Ron Paul and Newt on the floor when those guys had the potential to actually be nominated from the floor for the first vote. I mean, the whole thing was a mess. And I've got, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 videos and articles of just proof, enough to rip your heart out if you have any kind of soul at all about right and wrong. So that led me to I had formed a group, and mostly when I originally formed my group was mostly because I wanted a place where I could research Ron Paul because he was the only guy left standing, and I didn't have a real good opinion of him or a real bad opinion of him, and I wanted to do some research, and I wanted to get to know the guy and find out why it was there was a total media blackout on a guy that was actually making it all the way to the convention. And if they would have followed the rules and didn't break laws, he would have been nominated from the floor for the first vote. So I wanted to know why his organization, why he was being blacked out, who he was, what he stood for, what his platform was, et cetera. And that's when I first formed my group, and just as a research environment. And then I don't know what happened. One day I got up and started saying, okay, well, I'm going to start learning about third parties because I kind of felt like the GOP, you know, seeing the numbers through the years of it going from 35 to 28 down below 20% of the voting base. And with the way they treated Paul and the conservatives and the Tea Party, I figure, you know, they'll lose another 3-5%, and it's going to crash and be absorbed in the Democratic Party. I have no idea what they're trying to do. It looks like they're just trying to disappear. You know, that's when I started researching third parties, and I didn't even know what a third party was. I had heard of Ross Perot, you know, and that was like, I don't even know what year that was. And so it really was a total learning curve. But in doing the research, I kind of went, wow, there's some real conservatives out there. There's some real constitutionalists out there. And so that just started our journey, you know, of finding out who these people are, what the parties are, who the candidates are, you know, how they're positioned across the country. Because, I like a lot of people. I mean, when you have the independents at 42% and most of that coming out of the Republican Party over the last 10, 15, 20 years, yeah, some of it came out of the Democratic Party, but the big wave feeding the independents has been the Republican Party as they crime wave their way and lie and cheat and steal and break their promises to their voting base. You know, who cares what their platform is? They don't follow it. And, you know, I figured sooner or later it was going to crash and I needed a place to go. And there's millions of people out there wandering around, floating around in independent land. And I figured somebody had to know something about these parties and if they were real and viable and could be a play in the future. And that's kind of what brought me to where we are right now on this show. Of course, you know, there's thousands of hours of work and multiple radio shows and interviews, you know, between there and here. But that's where we're at today. And so that's my story in this thing. You know, I'm the most non-political guy that I know, and here I am in the middle of it because I'm watching these guys sell our country down the drain, and neither one of these candidates, you know, in the DNC and RNC or the duopoly, you know, they're identical. And both of their platforms and ideas are the next step to literally taking our country to where most of us don't want it to go. So that's my story. Anyway. Rex, your turn. Bob. Did you hear me at all?
I'm here, Chris. Sorry about that. What I said is I left a message with you in chat, and Brex isn't quite here yet. I left a message too in chat, so I'll just kind of fill in for him.
Yeah, why don't you give
so
your,
I'll just, I'll
your
just check
position?
That's exactly what I was going to.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to do. At this time, there was a pause there because I was trying to see about Rex, but since we're waiting, I'll go ahead and continue. Is that I was ever since I was 10, I considered myself a Republican, and even when I was a kid, people used to call me that I was like that character on Family Ties called Alex Keaton. If anyone knows who has ever watched that show. That's who my family's to compare me to. So they always call me the little Republican. I've been a loyal Republican GOP member. I've worked for a couple campaigns, grassroots. Of course, I've pretty much always voted down the line, on the Republican ticket. I did vote for Ross Perot the first time around that he did run. So, there has been times I have looked at third parties. Actually, when I was 10, and we were talking about when it was Carter, Anderson, and Ronald Reagan, is that, I was like, ooh, John Anderson, who's that guy? Because you're used to just hearing about, the Democrats and Republicans. And so, of course, through all those years, and then I was really a strong supporter of Newt Gingrich. I wanted Newt Gingrich to get into the race in 2008. But wisely, he opted to not do that. And so when he got into the race in 2012, I was really excited about it, and I supported him from the very beginning. And, I was just making some phone calls, and then I had someone who was the South Carolina phone team captain who asked me if I wanted a leadership position in the grassroots for in Ohio. For the grassroots, Newt Gingrich campaign. I said, of course. And so I became the Ohio phone team captain here for Newt Gingrich's grassroots campaign. And then after that, I was looking to try to find who the grassroots Ohio state coordinator was. But that person must have dropped out at that point in time. I think it was sometime after the Ohio primary. So we know that the once great state of Ohio went for Romney. So, so I wanted to still move on, support Newt. And so, almost by default, I became the Ohio state coordinator grassroots unofficially, and no official ties to the national campaign, of course. But I kind of took on the mantle as the Ohio state coordinator. And I also tried to get a hold of someone from the Indiana. And she said to me that she was going to switch to Romney because she wanted to go and support the person who had the power. Well, at this time, I told her about all the chicanery and the lies that was coming from the Romney camp. And she told me, well, you know what? That's just politics. And that's something that I wasn't going to agree with or support. So I continued to support Newt Gingrich. And, of course, we know how that went. We had a lot of disappointments, but still kept trudging on. And then we came to the convention. And before the convention, about a couple months before the convention, I spent a lot of time talking on Samuel Sanford's show, which is Constitutional Conservatives Unite, which you can find daily on Blog Talk Radio from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. And so I was on his show, as a guest sometimes. Sometimes, all the time. I was there every night. And then I also visited a show, which was Mark Prasik. It was a live video chat then. It is now the Full Armor, which, of course, as you've seen, is on the Patriot Journalist Network, which I mentioned earlier. And then the two talked with me and suggested that I start a Blog Talk radio show, in which I proceeded to do so after some thought. Excuse me. So they kind of spurred that on. So, thank you for Sammy and for Mark for getting that. Of course, if it wasn't for Sammy and his show, Constitutional Conservatives Unite, Bard's Logic, frankly, wouldn't exist. And so we talked, of course, in the beginning of trying to get a brokered convention. Of course, for me, the victory of a brokered convention, the way I would have liked it to go was to get would go to Newt Gingrich. But we know what happened at the convention. And so I decided, well, I can either try to stick with the Republican Party or look elsewhere and see if there are other options to, you know, to discuss with the folks about and inform people about, because there was so many conservatives who were stunned with what happened at the convention and said, you know, I'm not going to hold my nose again. I'm going to stick by my principles, and I'm going to try to find someone who I can vote for that would be that would still adhere by my conservative principles. And so we're vetting and discussing and strategizing, because we see where the two-party system has gotten us. And that's what we're going to be talking about tonight, in part, at least, of what we're going to be talking about tonight. And so that's where we are. And at this point, I think I'll go to ask Chris about what he thinks Romney's chances of success are in this election.
Well, let me read you, if I can get to it fast enough. Let me read you some numbers here. Maybe. I'm not smart enough, or they don't pay me $1 million a year to figure this stuff out. So all I can do is throw things together and try to come up with some decent ideas. But you know, Romney is pretty much somewhere between 105 to 155 electors behind Obama. Now, I know people love to quote national polls, and here's what's really important to understand. We don't vote as a nation. We vote by state. It's just amazing to me how many people love to tell you, oh, yeah, but he's 43 and Obama's 45. It don't matter. You know, it matters on how many states you win, how many electors you pick up. You have to gain 270 electors. It is not the nation voting. Okay, here's what I wanted to find you, Rob. In 2008, Obama had 365 electors. McCain lost with 173. So basically, we're running the guy who lost to the guy. Okay, oh, wait, let me try that again. We're running the guy who lost to the guy who lost to Obama by 192 electors. Now, currently, the numbers I've seen, and I'll come up with it later as we go, because if I keep trying to search while I'm talking, I'll lose my mind. But basically, you know, everything that we've been tracking, you know, I think he's down about, as of 2 days ago, 155 electors. So I don't care what his popularity is. If the guy can't win the states, he loses. And the numbers I've seen in all the key states, he's behind or way behind. So, and here's an interesting thing. Being a new guy. You know, I have studied Newt, watched Newt. You know, when Newt suspended, the RNC and Romney, I don't know what they had over him, but they pushed him hard to support Romney. And he's been on a nonstop daily run out there day after day after day after day after day, and actually Romney went down. So I don't know what they're going to pull out of the rabbit hat next, but and this is one thing that I want to put together as a timeline of all the gaffes, you know, and all the major events, whether it was the Supreme Court justice deciding to rewrite the Obamacare law, you know, that situation, or announcing Ryan, I think that gave him a half-point blip for a day, or the convention, which he actually came out of 3 points lower because of the dirty shenanigans at the convention and how poorly that came off. So, you know, I'd like to, when I get enough time, put together that timeline and show how he just cannot get traction. He won't attack Obama. And somebody asked me why. And I go, what's he going to attack him on? Cap and trade? He did it in Massachusetts. Gay marriage? He did it in Massachusetts. Raising business fees and stifling an economy? He did it in Massachusetts. Mandated health care? He did it in Massachusetts. What else? You know, I mean, that's his record. So how does he attack him on – how does he – go after Obama on anything except it's the economy, stupid? Well, that hadn't paid off very good. you know, because he's never risen above 200 electors, and you have to have 270 to win.
Mm-hmm.
So you,
right.
you know, so if somebody was would ask me, like what you just did, you know, can he win? I don't know. He can cheat. I've seen enough cheating through this whole primary. So, you know, we got all the machines, and I've seen all the evidence on what happens with those machines. You know, I've done all the research on that. So I suppose they can win by that. You know, and that's wonderful if that works, if they can get away with it. But as far as, like, winning fair and square, my opinion, probably not. Back to you, Ron.
Well, yeah, and I said, not just myself, I'm not saying just me, but, you know, since the question's directed to me, that I said for a long, long time that Romney could not and will not win. Said it for a long time. I mean, you know, standing on a soapbox or what have you or whatever, saying, Romney can't win. We need to get someone in there who can actually defeat Obama because Romney isn't it. We tried to warn the folks. I tried to warn them. Chris, you did. Rex did. Sammy did. You know, we tried to warn them, and now what are we looking at? The last time I looked, you're right, Chris, he's got 191 electoral votes, okay? You know, so that's, I mean, he would have to make up 80, you know, about 81 or something like that electors. And that's just, for that to happen by November 6th, it's not going to happen, you know. And so what he needs, if we're talking about, you know, what needs to happen is to realize why he's, you know, only at 191. And, well, of course, the conservatives don't support him. You know, and that's another thing we
neither do the independents.
Independents are conservative. A lot of your independents are conservative.
Yeah,
it's not just not conservative Republicans that are saying no to Romney, and it's only it's conservative independents. And actually, I had a person from New York who is a district chair. I believe they're a district chair. I know they hold a position within the Republican Party, but I believe it's a district chair contact me today to try to convince me to stop doing what I've been doing on the show, you know. And I find it interesting that there's people from the party who are trying to get us to stop because they know how effective we are, and now they're starting to realize that what do they need? They need the conservatives for Romney to win, but we know that's not going to happen.
No.
Okay? So I think if you could get the independent conservatives and the independent libertarians to join forces with the disaffected Republicans who are conservatives that by principle will not support Romney, then they can get a candidate that, you know, that can win, I think. You know, I think they can find a candidate
well,
in a third party that can beat Obama.
Yeah. Yeah, we get into that question a little bit later on.
Right.
You got Rex on the line there yet?
I'm done. Let me check.
I want to add this number before you give him Mike, because I'd like him to do that question of why, you know, that same question you and I just answered.
Sure.
But let me give you, I just got a new aggregated polls have Obama at 343 electors, Romney 182 with 13 toss up.
It looks like he sounds like he'd lost another state or is
he
losing
just lost
in another
some
state.
More. Yeah, he just went down again. And the guy that does this work for me, he watches some pretty serious numbers, you know, and is
mm-hmm.
on this stuff pretty tight. So, you know, regardless of what they want to tell you, Fox News, like I said, the one that just blows me away is the poll where they keep showing you a national popularity, Obama 45, Romney 43. That means nothing. I'm going to say it again. Nothing. It's state by state. Wins and losses. The guy who wins the most states and the most electors is the guy who wins, not the guy who has the highest percentage. Romney could actually win 48% in the popular vote and still lose in the elector vote. It's amazing how they play this. It's a lie. It's an illusion to get you to think that Romney's doing well. All right,
mm-hmm.
go ahead. Have Rex do his thing.
All right. Well, without further ado, I'll be bringing in Rex from the Tex and Rex Show, which folks can find starting, I believe, tomorrow from on Mondays and Tuesdays from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And without further ado, Rex, I'm opening up your mic. At least I'm going to open up your mic. There we go, Rex. Thank you very much. Good to hear you here. And we'd just like to throw this question at you after a little introduction. Is we were answering to people, or not answering to people, but just giving a little background or the journey that we've gone through that brought us to the point of researching third-party candidates.
Just in general?
In general. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, it's not that new to me. I actually have looked at third parties for quite some time, but when I first voted, I voted not for third party. I was considering Ross Perot, but and I'm talking presidential elections here. But they convinced me when I was young that, you know, that's dangerous and third parties don't win and we can't have, you know, Bill Clinton, so you've got to hold your nose and vote for George Bush, and I did it. Didn't work out too well. So I stopped doing that. But they got me again with it in 2008 because Obama was absolutely so terrible, and as bad as John McCain was, he's not nearly as bad as Barack Obama, so I sucked it up and voted McCain. That didn't work out too good for any of us. And the interesting thing is that this time their solution, well, they're giving us the same line, hold your nose, lesser of two evils, Obama's awful, can't give him another 4 years, so anybody but Obama. And the crazy thing is that they decided that they were going to put up the guy that lost to John McCain. You know, I mean, seriously. So when I first started watching this primary season, I thought, hey, you know what, Gingrich is here, and so Romney's not an issue, he's not going to get far. I mean, Gingrich is just going to kick everybody's butt. He might have a little trouble with Ron Paul, because Ron Paul's actually more on some issues considerably more constitutionalist than Gingrich, but you know, I'm pretty sure that Newt will handle Ron Paul, and of course Republicans tend to fear Ron Paul, so they'll go with the guy they know, Gingrich. And then I saw that the fix was in for Romney, which just blew me away. So that's when we started going for helping Newt in the primaries and brokered convention and all that stuff. And the crimes of the RNC and Romney just got worse and worse and worse. And so many people who are real, genuine conservatives who, you know, in the mold of Reagan and Gingrich, pretty much saw it and said, there's no way I would vote for Romney. Some of them have changed their mind, and I still haven't quite figured out why, because I said that I would never vote for Romney, not then, not now, not in November, not ever, and I'm not going to do it. The amazing thing is that I'm hearing talk that the liberal media is skewing the polls for Obama and that Romney's actually winning. I have a lot of trouble believing that. I don't have trouble believing that the liberal media will skew the polls. I mean, they've done that before. I just... You know, how do you skew the polls to 80 to 100 electors? I mean, they're not talking about 15 or 20 electors. They're talking about 80 to 100. Even if they're skewing them, man, that's something serious is wrong there. So as I see it and as we all saw it beforehand, Romney's not going to win. He can't win. It's impossible for him to win. So why would you waste your vote voting for a guy who stands for everything in which you disagree? I mean, we you know, conservatives just do not agree with Mitt Romney on anything. So why would we vote for him? So that's kind of how I got here. And then for me, it's just a no-brainer. You start looking at third parties, and frankly, you know, two of them have jumped to the top as the most viable options. Obviously, Gary Johnson with the Libertarian Party and Virgil Goode with the Constitution Party, who's considerably more conservative, obviously. It's just a matter of in which state can which guy win. And then I also wouldn't rule out taking a look at Jill Stein. Now, personally, I can't vote for the Green Party because I don't agree with anything that they stand for. But there's a lot of people that are upset about Obama and his policies, which haven't comported with the ideals of the left, and also the fact that they staged their convention against their own delegates as well. So I say if you're a liberal, vote for Jill Stein. Okay. That's pretty much how I got here.
I'm sorry, what was the last part?
I said that's pretty much how I got here.
Okay. Well, the question that Chris and I first answered was let me scroll up a little bit here, is how do you view Romney's, and we've answered this, but how do you view Romney's chances of success in this election?
He kind of answered that.
No.
I mean,
but if you want to give more,
we can go more detail. Sure, we can go more detail. I mean, Chris is right. I sort of answered that. We've talked about it before, actually. But, I mean, look, in modern history, okay, no Republican or alleged conservative candidate for president has won who did not carry the conservative Christian vote. It hasn't been done. Now, can it be done? Conceivably, I would say in a few years, if we keep going down this path, it's quite possible. But as of right now, that vote is the most important vote for a conservative, and Romney can't carry that vote. And when I say can't carry it, it doesn't mean that there aren't some Christians that are unaware of how twisted he is or unaware of how anti-life he is or how pro-gay marriage he is. They just might think that, because he's got the R after his name, he must be good on those issues. But there's at least 15 or 20% of the Christian vote that is totally aware of who he is, and they won't vote for him. So he's got no shot there. In addition to that, in key swing states, which you need in order to carry the Electoral College, he's got no shot. He's behind in every single one of them by 8 to 10 points. And even if you factor in a skewed liberal bias, what are you going to – on the optimistic side, you can cut that deficit by 50%. He still doesn't have a shot. So I would argue that his chances of winning are 0%, save for one little teeny-weeny factor, and that is the Diebold machines and George Soros.
Mm-hmm.
If Soros has decided that Romney's his guy, then that's the way it'll go. But other than that
right. –
It ain't going to happen. I mean, it's just that simple. It's just not going to happen.
So what do you say to the folks? You say, we are part of the problem for not supporting Romney.
We are part of the problem for not supporting Romney. Well,
right.
I think that is a seriously twisted view of the facts because, I keep hearing this thing, well, I'm not voting for Romney. I'm voting against Barack Obama. Except that if you look at your ballot, there is no against option. You cannot go up there and vote against a candidate. You can only vote for a candidate. So the only people voting for Barack Obama are the morons that are actually willing to vote for Barack Obama. And even if we who are awake and aware and understand what the RNC did and understand the thievery and realize that this is not truly a second party but merely a different aspect or a different wing of the same party, even if all of us were to vote for Mitt Romney, he still wouldn't win. So it doesn't matter.
Okay, Chris. Well, go ahead.
Okay.
I just stopped typing something in chat here. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. What do I say to him? Quit drinking. You're drinking too much. Yeah, and I'm sorry. But, come on. What Rex says is true. Even if you could get all the conservatives and Christians to vote for Romney, which will never happen. You cannot win when your party's only 20% of the voter base of the voting bloc of America without the independents. They don't like him either. So, that's my non-sophisticated get to the point, bottom line is, the Hispanics don't like him. The African Americans don't like him. The moderates who they thought he was going to be the guy that would pull them in, they don't like him. The independent conservatives who are you would call Tea Party people, that are strict constitutionalists, smaller government, get out of my life, let me keep my gun. I don't believe in NDAA, Mitt Romney, who would vote for it as it was written, burning of the Declaration. Bill of Rights, they won't vote for him because they actually – the reason they're independents is because they're sick of what they've seen in the Republican Party over the last 10, 15 years. So they're conservatives, but they typically are small government, constitutionally minded people. So Mitt Romney doesn't fit any of those dynamics, so mm-hmm. they won't vote for him. So that really explains – and Rex, you didn't – before you came on, the new aggregated polls – 343 Obama, Romney 182, 13 in toss-up. And Florida, New Mexico, and Nevada have increased from slight towards Obama to lean which means they're starting to move more aggressively towards Obama. So, you know, even with Newt out there daily, you know, screaming about how wonderful Romney is and how he's got to go and Obama's got to go. Well, that was a Freudian slip, but it ain't working. So, anyway, next question.
It won't work. And here, Chris, here, let me just interject real quick.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I'm getting from people who are considering or have already decided to vote for Romney is one, well, we know how bad Obama is, but Romney hasn't done these bad things yet, so we need to give him the benefit of the doubt. Well, then by that reasoning, we should have voted for Obama in 2008. He was promising hope and change and middle-class tax cuts and ending the wars. So, you know, we should have given him the benefit of the doubt, too. I wasn't going to give Obama the benefit of the doubt. I knew who he was, and I know who Romney is. And anybody that says that they don't know who he is isn't paying attention, because the fact is that let's just assume that we all put down our voices now and roll up our principles and capitulate and say, okay, you know what, I'm going to hold my nose one more time and we'll fix it in 4 years and I'm going to vote for your Romney guy. And let's just say the independents do the same thing and he actually wins. What do you think will change in January? Nothing. He'll get rid of Obamacare. Well, first of all, he can't get rid of Obamacare, but let's just say that he did. He specifically said repeal and replace. Now, knowing Romney's history, what would he replace it with? Because, you see, you remember on the campaign trail when they said, you know, well, isn't Romney Care just like Obamacare? And Romney said, well, that was a mistake. I made a terrible decision when I was governor and put this plan in place. It only worked because we gutted Medicare and had the federal government subsidize us.
Bingo.
And since it's such a colossal mistake, I have to say that Obama made a bigger mistake by making it national, right? Remember when he said that?
Nope, he didn't.
Oh, that's right. He said, I defend my decision to put Romney Care in place. That was good for the state of Massachusetts, Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So,
that's not true.
So if he's holding fast to his decision, then he's going to, let's just say that he had the power to repeal Obamacare, then he's going to replace it with Romney Care, which is more or less the same thing. But of course, you know, he'll be good on defense. Well, what foreign policy experience does he have for us to go by? Because Obama didn't have any, and he's been a colossal failure. And Romney happens to like a lot of the same moronic neocon douchebags that were packed in the Bush administration that screwed up that foreign policy. He went on a foreign tour, right? He went to Great Britain, and he went to Israel, and he went to Poland, and he inserted both his feet. Well, first he shot them both and then inserted them both into his mouth at least once in each country. So I'm thinking that that's probably not going to bode well for his foreign policy or diplomatic relations. So he's probably going to be good on the economy because he's a turnaround business guy, right? I mean, he's going to turn America into Staples and Sports Authority, right? Well, no. First of all, I don't know that would be good because we need manufacturing, and Romney's manufacturing prowess is that he outsources it overseas and guts the companies that make stuff here. But let's just assume that, you know, he's going to be pro-manufacturing. So what? He's the president. He's not the chief executive of the economy. So, you know, and the fact that he supports the Fed, the fact that he supports Ben Bernanke, the fact that he supports TARP, the fact that he supports the bailouts, the fact that he supports QE 1, 2, 3, and forever, nothing is going to change. So why are we so afraid of Obama's policies that we want to get rid of Obama, but we want to replace him with another guy who maybe wears a different kind of suit and has different hair and wears a different team jersey but supports the same policies? What will we win on January 20th? Nothing. Nothing at all. In fact, it'll be worse because everybody will think that you know, we've won and we've displaced Obama and happy days are here again, and Romney will just double down on all the crappy policies we've got and make things worse without a house to stop him. Back to you, Robert.
Okay. Thank you. Now, just to Rex, is what do you see happening because of the choices the Republicans have made by their actions in Congress, running McCain and now Romney? Do you think the party will survive, and what do you think will happen, and why do you think that?
Well, now you're asking me to predict the future, which is next to impossible. But I will. I will say this.
We engage in a little speculation.
Yeah, the party will not survive in its current form at all. Now, that does not mean that there will not be a revitalized Republican Party. There could be. And I believe that that's something that people like Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin can be instrumental in making happen. And the party can actually become the party of Reagan and Gingrich once again if they have the tool of leverage to say, look, you ran Bush, you ran Dole, you ran McCain, you ran Romney, and they were absolutely terrible. We've got to stop running these tepid, moderate, liberal, establishment-type guys in the party, and we need to run people like Reagan and Gingrich and real conservatives. Doing that, with the Ron Paul supporters taking over the precincts and what's left of the legitimate Tea Party doing the same thing, then there might be a shot. However, you've got many factors that don't bode well for that. Number one, I love Newt Gingrich, and Newt Gingrich is a great man, and I think that he did more for this party in this country than anybody in recent history. But his appearing support of Romney, I think, is going to hurt dramatically in the long run. Sarah Palin's support of conservatives for the Senate is laudable, but she's largely been absent in the narrative otherwise. And unfortunately, most of the so-called Tea Party, and what I mean by that is the people who consider themselves Tea Party and are active in their local Tea Parties, as well as the Tea Party candidates like Alan West, Marco Rubio, and all those guys, they've been appropriated to a degree where it's basically just a let's take a step back from the ledge that the Republicans have walked off, and we'll roll it back to, 2006. Well, I hate to tell you this, but 2006 was when they fell apart. So if they roll it back to 2006, that's not much of a rollback, so I'm not buying it. So if I was a betting man, I would say that the Republican Party is on its way out. But that doesn't mean that it can't be revitalized. But I got to tell you, if you're really a conservative, if you're a true conservative, and you're looking for that Reagan-Gingrich-type party, I think the Constitution Party's got all that laid out. And if for any reason you think that their structure isn't adequate, you're welcome to take over the Libertarian Party.
Yep, that's right. Cool. You done?
Yep. Go for it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just holler when you're done. I don't want to interrupt you.
No.
I totally agree with Rex. When I formed that question, what do you see happening because of the choices they have made? If you go back, all the way back to the Bush era and even before that, when, like Rex talked about, running these moderates, continually running these losing moderates, continually trying to force a moderate down America's throat, has hurt from an election standpoint. But the choices they've made, the spending in the Bush eras, the endless wars, running on the Cold War policies in foreign policy instead of making the adoptions and changes that necessary, passing that off to the next inexperienced guy, it's been a nightmare. The overspending, the No Child Left Behind, the compassionate capitalism, the trying to tie churches to the federal government with that program. I mean, just nonstop mistake after mistake. And if we move into our current era with Mr. John Boehner, one of Rex's favorite guys, and you look at what he hasn't done, everybody wants to scream Obama this, Obama that, Obama this, Obama that, Obama this. Oh, God, did you see Obama 2016, what he's going to do to us? And everybody's just quaking in their boots. And my number one question every time somebody throws that crap at me is, what did the Republicans do to stop him? This is not a dictatorship. There's three heads of that government up there. Newt Gingrich was in the exact same position in a different era, with the exact same position in the House and the Senate, with one of the most liberal presidents in our history, and he kept crap together, and he didn't let crap happen. And he actually got some reforms pushed through. So So, you know, I look at, when I look at 20 senators standing with Obama on the Treaty of the Sea, right, you know, giving our power to the UN and a portion of all of our natural resources that were found off our shores, thank God that got canceled because we had 20 Republicans ready to sign on it. Okay, when I look at NDAA, if you want to know who not to vote for and who to replace in the Republican Party, every man, woman, and child that voted for NDAA. Okay, if you the debt ceiling, did they stop that? No. Not only didn't they stop it, they gave him what he wanted, gave him a blank checkbook, and no constraints. And then for 2 years they complained about how he spends money. You know, it's all a marketing strategy to make Obama look terrible while the Republicans are selling their soul down the drain and not doing what we voted them to do. You know, so where do I see it? Will it survive? I don't know. Depends. It depends on how bad, you know, what happens when Romney crashes. You know, are the good, decent people left in the party, you know, the Newts and the Sarahs and the rest of them, people that we like and admire, are they going to be able to take over the party and restructure it and bring it back to reality and get the kick the progressives and the liars and the criminals out? Maybe. Maybe not. The Tea Party, you know, they had sweeping wins in 2010. I watched an interview with Michael Steele, and I can't wait to get a hold of his book because it's going to be all revealing about the Republican Party. I'm just, you know, but he was on Jon Stewart, that interview. It was hilarious, you know, because Jon Stewart asked him, why'd they fire you? And he goes, I don't know. You know, I was, you know, he counted off all the successes he had, you know, governorships, you know, the taking over the House, almost taking over the Senate, all the things he'd done, and they got rid of him for doing good work. So
he got Gingrich.
You know,
got Gingrich. They Gingrich Steele. That's what they did to Gingrich, and then they did it to Steele, and that's what they do to conservatives. So if you want to save this party, you got to get rid of the guys that keep getting rid of the conservatives.
This really goes back to the, you know, the whole Rockefeller, Reagan, you know, that whole battle. It's been going on for years. Mm-hmm. And they're the money and the power and behind the scenes, and they're not even real Republicans, you know, in terms of what you think of as a Republican. So will it survive? Maybe. But my attitude is we need options, but we'll get into that later. I'm done.
Okay, let's move on, Chris, and we'll put the question here because I think you're giving some good segues into what you just said. So it sounds like the Republican Party has not lived up to its platform and or has failed its voters. So could you elaborate on the point?
Yeah, you got me first on this question. You know, this is just kind of rolls off of what I was just talking about. You know, I really believe that platform is built for one thing, to sucker Christians and conservatives into giving money and voting for Republicans. I do not see anything that they've done in the last 10-plus years that says that platform has anything to do with what they believe or will act upon when they're in power. And people like to say, oh, when they get there's so much corruption. Come on, man. These guys are going in corrupt. They're turning, like I said, just look at the last couple of years of Boehner and some of the new Tea Party people. You know, they rolled over. They weren't there for 10 years and finally got corrupt. They walked in the door and started supporting the exact opposite of what our party platform is. So have they failed the platform and the voters? Yes. And the question is, at this point in time, is will the voters finally recognize that enough is enough and make a decision to either, I mean, obviously they're going independent, you know, because those numbers are going skyrocketing. But the question
is,
Chris,
because I know some people are going to know, do you have that offhand? It's like 42% or 48% consider themselves independent?
It's 42, 28, and 19. 20, I do believe.
Oh,
yeah, 19, 20, somewhere right around in there. And that's prior to the that's after the McCain debacle, but prior to the Romney debacle. So we'll see what that, you know, what the fallout on this one's going to be. Go ahead, Rex.
Well, first off, you have to ask yourself, is the platform expressing my values? And odds are that the Republican platform is pretty close to conservative values. So that's something to feel pretty good about. But since the U.S. Constitution in Article 1 limits the power of Congress to 18 enumerated powers, and Article 2 clearly says that the president may only prosecute a war as commander-in-chief when Congress gives him a declaration of war, excuse me, then they're not respecting the document which we consider the supreme law of the land. Why would you expect them to respect a document that is simply the expression of the delegates of a private club, especially given the fact that now we know for a fact that the Republicans have absolutely no respect for their duly elected delegates, and they will lie, steal, cheat, and do everything else in their power to override their delegates. So if they have no respect for the delegates that helped create the platform, and they're willing to circumvent those rules, and they don't care about the supreme law of the land to which they take an oath before God, what makes you think that the party platform means anything to any of them?
Paper, empty words.
Yeah, now they might give nice speeches about it, their rhetoric might match it, but, you know, you've been voting for this party for 39 years since Roe v. Wade because you want to vote pro-life, and they haven't done anything about it. You've been voting for this party that is the party of non-intervention foreign policy, and they've, you know, roped you into several unending wars. You voted for the party of fiscal restraint, and all they've done is spend us into debt. So my question is, when are you going to say, hey, this party is not doing the things that I ask it to do. They're not doing the things that I give it money to do. They're not doing the things that I vote for people to do. And, you know, then you start going into the calculus of, well, at least they're not as bad as the other guys. Well, I mean, first of all, I don't know that that's necessarily true. And then second of all, how's this lesser of two evils thing working out for you? I mean, you know, are things good? Are they worse? You know, this is what Reagan said. Are you better off 4 years than you were 4 years ago? We're not better off than we were 4 years ago. We're not better off than we were 8, 16, or 20 years ago. So maybe this is going in the wrong direction, and we need to actually make some serious changes. Oh, but third parties never win. Well, it's that kind of negative, defeatist attitude where you compromise your patriotism for your country, your love of the Constitution, and standing up for American principles in order to elect a bunch of hooligans who could care less about any of that stuff, that's where you lose it. So as long as you have voters who are willing to elect people who will plunder others for them, and voters who are willing to capitulate and vote for people who appear to agree with them but share none of their values out of fear, you're never going to change anything, which is precisely why third parties haven't had much success. But the fact is that what they've done this time is so glaring, so across the line, it is a bridge too far, that even if you are a pragmatic voter who is willing to hold his nose for a less than ideal Republican in order to oust the socialist Democrat, how can you do it when the lying, the stealing, the thievery, the disrespect, the flouting of the law was so egregious that your vote is basically giving it cover? Your vote is giving assent to that behavior. How can you do that? I don't think it can be done and keep your moral conscience in place, which is why I suspect that so many conservatives who wanted Newt Gingrich and Kane and Bachman and even Rick Santorum are so vehemently the ones that are attacking us for exercising our conscience. Hey, look, if somebody wants to truly vote for Mitt Romney out of a conviction, you know, that they like his policies, they like what he stands for, they respect him and they want him to be their president, I don't begrudge him for it. I mean, everybody's entitled to be a moron if they want to be. I'm not going to attack them for it. It's their vote. But the very simple fact is that no one thinks that. Everybody is telling me that we have to vote for him because he's less bad than the other guy. But he's not less bad than the other guy. He's a lying, stealing, you know, thief, a crook, and a liar. I mean, it's just that's who he is. So if you have any sense of moral backbone, if you have any sense of love of this country and any respect for the Constitution, even if you just like the Republican Party, this guy's destroying it. You can't support him. And the fact is that if everybody who's holding their nose to vote for this guy actually voted for someone who represents their values, we wouldn't be talking about Mitt Romney. And if you did that, then the people on the left who are being given the same line and the same pressure might actually have the backbone to vote for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein instead of Barack Obama, and then neither of these pricks would be in the White House. Did you ever think of that? Back to you, Robert.
Okay, great. And I think that's a great question to pose to everyone, for everyone to consider and to ponder over. And we bring up third parties, and so I'd like to, if you could give us a little synopsis of what you've learned of the top two parties, and I'm talking about the third parties, I should say, the Libertarian and the Constitution parties that are available to voters, and what do you think of the party and the candidates that you've heard of so far, heard from, I should say, so far?
Right.
Well, put it this way.
Excuse me.
First of all, I think that we're giving this far more credence than it truly deserves, because we spend all of our time talking about the election that happens every two and then again every 4 years for one government. And the fact is that in this country, if you exclude townships, cities, municipalities, states, and you know, all the smaller, you know, just counting the states, there's at least 52 governments. So, you know, focusing on this one to the extent that we do is almost ludicrous as Americans. However, you know, power consolidation has made it, you know, more impactful on our lives than ever before. But maybe we need to approach it as much from the other side as we do this side, which is focusing on the states, the state legislatures, the governors, the juries, the sheriffs, because the states have the power to roll back the federal government quite easily, actually, if they would just do it. And maybe that's what we need to focus on. In the meantime, you need to vote in a strategic way that will actually change the way the game is played, because the media is in bed with the corporatists. It's owned by a few corporations, and these people are either paid to lie to you, or because they actually got a degree in communism that was covered under the title journalism, they actually believe the crap that they spew. And I suspect that most of them, other than knowing where to put a comma in a sentence, if that, they're not that bright. So if you want them to pay attention, you have to force them to pay attention. And the best way to force them to pay attention is stop playing the game. Stop playing the game. So you have choices. Now, if you're a hardcore conservative, if you're a Reagan Gingrich conservative, there really is only one viable third-party candidate for you in all but 10 states, okay? And that's Virgil Goode. Now, in 10 states, I suspect that you could actually vote for a true conservative Republican, and that would be Dr. Ron Paul. Unfortunately, Mr. Goode is not going to be that attractive to those who might be fiscally conservative but are quite libertine in their social values, in which case Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party is going to be more attractive to them. And in certain states, I would argue places like Vermont, New Hampshire, possibly out west in Nevada and that sort of thing, he might be the more attractive candidate. Now, the proper debate in this country would probably be between the Constitution Party and the Libertarian Party, both constitutionalists, but one rather liberal and one rather conservative. That's the way it should be, and that's the way that it would be. But right now, you kind of got to bury that hatchet, because you're not comparing your ideal conservative politics or your ideal liberal politics against the other party. You're comparing the fact that you are voting within a constitutional framework with two parties that are operating extra-constitutionally. Basically, the Republicans and the Democrats represent criminal government, and the Libertarians and the Constitution Party represent constitutional government. So at this stage of the game, it's a fight between criminal government and constitutional government. Once you get that fixed, then let's have a fight with the Libertarians. So I won't fight with a Libertarian right now. I mean, you know, there are significant issues that I have with them. However, I'm willing to lay all of those aside when I'm over and against Romney and Obama. Now, once we win, I will fight the Libertarians tooth and nail on those policies. But until then, we're allies because the other guys are just absolute criminals. So I really think the Constitution Party needs a really close look at, the Libertarian Party needs a close look at. If you're in a write-in state, one of the 10 where you actually can be, then, you know, Ron Paul might be a bet to go with. And the idea is that you need to win your state. So you can't have 20% of the state, 25%, 30% of the state divided between Johnson, Goode, and Paul. You need to all figure out which one in each state you're going for based on the majority and win the electors of that state so that you can chip away at Obama and Romney. Now, it is not likely that Mr. Virgil Goode is going to chip away at Obama because people who are voting for Obama are not likely to look at Mr. Goode. But people that vote for Obama are likely to look at Gary Johnson. Some of them might even consider Ron Paul. And many of them will consider Jill Stein of the Green Party. So the idea is that right now the nemesis, the guy to take down is Obama, not Romney. Romney's already lost. So to take down Obama, you need to pull away votes from the left. And as you do that, you want to make sure you don't inadvertently hand a victory to Romney. So you want to keep him below 270 as well. And if we do that, then this thing goes to the House, and whichever one has the most votes between Goode and Johnson will be one of the three, including Obama and Romney, selected by Congress for president. Now, one would argue, well, that's actually a benefit to Romney. It might be. So if you're, you know, truly a Romney voter, that would be probably the only chance you have other than the Diebold machines to get Romney to be president. But the fact is, the shit's going to hit the fan no matter who becomes president. But at least if this thing goes to the House, then it cannot be denied that the two-party duopoly over our minds is broken. And then you watch what happens in 2016. In 2016, people will say, I'm not voting for a party. I'm going to find someone who stands for the principles in which I believe. And you'll see some real American stuff happening. Back to you, Robert.
Okay, yeah, I'm doing some multitasking here as I normally do. I think they're trying to get something squared away and panned out. There might have been a miscommunication on one part I'm trying to pan out and smooth out. But anyway, so I want to bring on, go to the next, and that is about third-party candidate kind of winning this. Go ahead, Chris.
Wait, let me answer. Let me take my second, just a quick thing on what Rex was saying.
Sure, go ahead, and I'll have to square it away.
Yeah, no problem. Here, and that next question, he just answered it, so we don't need to do it. That was the 270 thing, so we can roll past that one. He already answered it. So the only thing I want to say, and I'm not gonna disagree with what Rex said. I'm just gonna throw this out there. We don't know exactly, you know, we do have Ron Paul write in, and there's that whole Ron Paul write-in campaign, but even if they write, you know, they write him in 10 states, he's not going to win 270 electors. So that's something you have to calculate in your decisions in those states. There may be states where he absolutely, you know, can take the state. And Rex, you missed this earlier, but they actually got him on the ballot in Maine. I don't know how they did it. I haven't read all the details yet, but they literally got him on the ballot. So
go Maine.
They registered him, and he's on the ballot. You know, in the kind of write-in state where you actually have to do something to get on the ballot. I thought the campaigns had to do it, but I guess the delegates, somebody was able to get it done. So we have to keep our eye on what's going to happen. You know, with that whole write-in Ron Paul campaign. But the only thing that I would say, when you step back and you look at the whole bigger picture, you know, in terms of what Rex says is absolutely true in terms of that blocking 270. The only other thing that you're going to run into is that people are going to make decisions that this is the party I want to support, period, and this is who I'm going to vote for. Everybody's, you know, it's going to be an interesting thing to see how people play this out. You know, it would be cool if we could get everybody to do exactly what they need to do in every state, you know, to make it happen, but, you know, good luck on that one. But you know what I mean.
Yeah,
so,
You're herding cats, and you can't herd cats. But the simple fact is that you need to put the idea in people's heads, because the fact is that if you're truly a conservative and Goode is more appealing to you, but Johnson has a huge lead in your state, your vote is better served voting for Johnson, and you can in good conscience vote for Johnson. You know, he's not Romney. He's better than McCain. So if you held your nose and voted for McCain, then you can vote for Johnson.
Agreed.
Does that help? Yes, it actually helps Virgil Goode if you do that, because the idea is to break the system. If you break the current hold on the system by the two parties, then that only benefits the Constitution Party. So ideally, everybody should vote their conscience, okay? But sometimes you have to be strategic without compromising your conscience. I mean, I can't be strategic and vote for Romney. I could be strategic and vote for McCain, but that was a bad strategy and it didn't work. But I can't do it for Mitt Romney, and I suspect that's true for most people who are not already wrapped up in the Romney campaign. So, you know, you just have to be a realist about it. But, you know, the default option is always vote your conscience, because, you know, the results aren't yours, and nobody. I don't care which moron on TV, whether it's that douchebag from Texas, Karl Rove, or that Dick Morris character. They don't know squat about what's going to happen, because they only talk or poll people who are in the duopoly mode. And I know this because I get a lot of these electronic surveys here, and the options don't comport with what I'm doing. So when I do not pick the, you know, two options or the three options that they give me, which are completely skewed, the machine doesn't know how to process that. And if you get a person on the line and you have a conversation with them, they don't know how to process it. So that information is not getting filtered up to the media. And even if it did, I doubt they would report on it. So the very simple fact is that nobody knows what's going to happen, other than one obvious fact: Romney can't win. I mean, that's just – the numbers are just way too dramatic. Even if you were to give a 50% margin of error on those numbers, he still can't win. So it's not going to happen. So I think that ultimately, if you vote your conscience, you'll be okay. But I would urge you to be realistic about it and consider the best third-party option within your state, depending on the demographic and political makeup of your state or commonwealth.
Right.
Back to you, Robert.
Good point.
Thank you. Okay. Well, we'll move on to the next. And where and which, Rex, that you think what it will take long-term for a third party to become a dominant party?
Well, I don't think it'll be too long a term.
Like,
yeah, it won't be too long. It won't be too long a term, because as Chris has pointed out so many times, the Republicans are bleeding out membership. Why? Because they pretend to be something, and then they are something else, and that something else is not attractive to their electorate. So the electorate that is just too blind and doesn't pay attention and just goes and pushes the R button every 2 and 4 years, they're still there. One day they'll probably wake up, and I suspect it'll probably be on November 7th. But so many other people have just moved away because they realize, look, these people aren't conservative, and I'm just not buying it anymore. So it's happening. Now, the Democrats, well, I mean, they're their own worst enemy, because they only operate under the illusion that they're the majority. And the fact is that the Democrats live in New York and Los Angeles. The rest of the country is not Democratic. They just happen to vote that way because of the booty that they get by voting for others to plunder for them. And the fact is that plunder is illegal and immoral, even if you do it under the cover of law. So, and the fact is that that only works when you have something to plunder. And as Margaret Thatcher so succinctly said, the problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of other people's money. Guess what? We've run out of money. And the ramifications of the end of the socialist road that we've been on are going to hit. They're going to hit soon. Now, when I say soon, could be this week, could be this month, could be in the next 12 or 24 months. Either way you cut it, it is going to hit. It's going to hit soon, and people are going to realize, wow, it doesn't work. At which time the party that's proposing the ideas that really do work, based not only on principle and a little bit of reasoning, but on historical precedent. We have something that most, quote, socialist countries never had. We've got the 80s under Reagan, and we've got the 90s under Gingrich to show us what actually worked. And we just need to do much, much more of that. So people are going to wake up when we run out of money anyway, and I think that the third parties that are principled, operating within the Constitution and standing up for timeless rules that of economics and governance and how to keep a society together are going to rise. And the way that that works is you do not dictate anything from the national capital, or I should say the imperial capital. You can't dictate war policy from there when you're extended all over the world. You can only dictate war policy when you're actually engaging in defensive and just wars. You cannot dictate economic policy because nobody can manage the economy. You cannot dictate social policy because social policies are community specific. So the very simple fact is you have to diffuse that power, and the parties that are standing up for that, returning power where it belongs, to the states, to the counties, to the municipalities, and to the people, those are going to be the parties that will actually rise up out of the ashes. And I suspect strongly that the Constitution Party will become the dominant party. The Libertarian Party will have some sway as well. But unfortunately, when you have this sort of anything goes as long as you don't step on someone else's toes policy, you will have such a diverse group of people with such differing ideas that it is unlikely that you will be a national player, whereby with the Constitution Party you have more of a common ethos, so to speak. So I think that's what's going to happen. But we all have to remember something, and Chris pointed this out before. Every single one of these people in these parties is a sinner. That doesn't mean they're going to go there to do bad things, but we're all prone to screw up. And the entire genius of our system is that it is to hold men to account by binding them down with the chains of the Constitution. If we return to those principles, then we will win no matter what. Go to you, Chris.
Yep, I totally agree. That was beautiful, Rex. You know, basically, when I look at, you know, the research that I've been doing, I look at a couple different things. One, you know, top of the ticket is probably the last thing I look at. The only, and like Rex said earlier, you know, it seems to be where everybody looks, but it's like, that's one man. That didn't make a party. You know, that just makes a man in a position that you're voting, you know, hopefully voting that person into power for. You know, you look at the strength of the party down ballot, and the Constitution Party is getting its act together on, let's see, in 15 states, they have everything from you know, governors, lieutenant governors, to sheriffs, to state reps, to U.S. House and U.S. Senate reps. So, you know, there's real things happening, and we've interviewed a bunch of their people and actually have somebody on Tuesday for us also, and the Tuesday after that. And, you know, there's some great people, and they have some real substance to them, and they're real core value constitutionalists, you know, and I think that the word I'm going to use more than conservative, because I think that word has been misused, you know, and misunderstood by people. People call themselves conservatives that aren't, and so it's been co-opted, and now Romney is the new conservative. Okay, well, you know, I don't want any part of that. So I think constitutionalist is the new term. And most of the people that we've talked to or interviewed or whatever are constitutionalists who understand the limits of the Constitution, or that, not, you know, and the limits of federal government, and understand that the future of this country is in getting the federal government back to where it belongs. Now, as far as the down ballot thing goes, they have a 120 give or take down ballot candidates across the country, and they're good people. So if you get these people in power, they're going to do good works, and that's especially true in the Senate and the House. Now the Libertarian Party's got 565 down ballot people, so that party's been around for about 20 years longer. They've got more players in the field and more places, you know, more places to put those people across the country. So long term, I think that when you look at that number, that 42% independent. When this information gets out there, well, the information's already out there. When people start, when they pick it up and start looking at it, and of course Gary Johnson's getting a lot of play in a fair amount of play in national media, and maybe on the debates. So, and he already has a little bit of a national presence because he was in the early primary of the Republican Party. So I think that more and more and more people are going to look the direction of these two parties. How fast will this turnaround happen? It could happen almost instantly. All it takes is a few million people to get up and make a decision. But how fast will it happen after the elections, the year after that? I would say in the next couple, 3 years, these parties could be very close to being the dominant parties in this country. I really do. Now, whether it happens in that timeline or not, you know, I don't get $1 million a year figuring that stuff out like Karl Rove does, but I believe it will. You know, and especially when you look at the people that I've met. It's the first time I've talked to politicians where I actually enjoy talking to them and have a common thread, because they're real people who believe in real things. They're not these party loyalist salesmen who are lying the moment they open their mouth. So, yeah, but that's my input on that. Go ahead, Rob.
Okay, what I'd like to do is I'd like to ask you, Gentlemen Rex and Chris, is we've got about four more questions we'd like to get into. However, it is 10:25. So what I would like to do at this time is possibly go ahead and have some callers in. And then what questions we do not get, and they're very important questions, I'm not trying to limit any of them, and perhaps we still can touch on them tonight, but perhaps we can continue with those four starting off tomorrow, because I know we have some folks who've been waiting for quite some time. So what's your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, go for it. Yeah, bring them
okay,
in. I just got a chat. Yeah, there were several people that are on hold.
Right, yeah, and I'd hate to have them wait not for too much longer.
Robert, can I say this to the people you're getting ready to let in?
Sure.
We don't have time for a big dialogue. We ask a question, let us answer it, and then let us move on, because we're getting short on time.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, the first person we got in here is another member of the Bard's Logic panel, and we all know him well. And he's the author of the book, The Hidden Fourth Branch, and knows much about the federal grand jury and the libertarian movement and party. And without further ado, I will be bringing in Kelly Mordecai. Hello, Kelly, and thank you for calling in.
Hey, Robert. Hey, Chris. Hey, Rex. How you guys doing?
Hey, buddy.
All right, Kelly.
Hey. Yeah, I really like your comments. You know, Rex, you meant something about trying to tie people down by the change of the Constitution. Jefferson said it brilliantly. In matters of power, then, let no more be said about the corruption of man, but bind him down with the chains of the Constitution. And, of course, the Founding Fathers knew that. Our country's a mess. And the elephant donkey gang keeps putting us more in a mess, with the federal government growing and growing and growing. And, I was surprised hearing that Arizona is now swaying towards Obama, and maybe they're having a change of thinking. I mean, I'm thinking Arizona, some pretty tough, almost on the edge of militia, open carry laws. Maybe they've taken on a perspective of a local here that I know. His name's Terry. He's a real rugged kind of guy, but he runs a nursery and knows the Constitution. He goes, you know what, I'm voting for Obama. What? Terry, you love the Constitution. What are you thinking? Well, if I vote for Obama, the revolution will happen sooner. And there's life after the revolution.
That's just stupid. You know what?
Well,
there's merit to that, okay? Because the fact is that, you know, until people feel the pressure and feel the pain, they won't necessarily make a change, because we're creatures of habit and we live in our comfort zones. But that doesn't mean that you're allowed to help it along, because you can't do evil to get a good result. So voting for Obama in order to make the revolution more rapid is just dumb.
Funny. But, I want to throw out some other thoughts, too. If you study the powers that be, they've done it once again. You get the red or the blue option, but we picked it for you. It's like when my son was 3 or 4 years old, I was helping him dress because we got to get somewhere. Do you want the red shirt or the blue shirt? I gave him a choice. And, well, I always gave him a choice, but I picked them for him. So that's kind of what I'm seeing. Back in, 2004, I had it. I just said, I'm done. I mean, you Republicans were bitching about Clinton, and you've gotten into power, and you spent us into oblivion. You know, and Rush Limbaugh before that was, oh, Clinton, the Democrats are spending us into oblivion, and the Republicans get in power to do the same stinking thing. And I said, Rush, I'm sorry, goodbye, I'm done listening to you for a while. And so my methodology back then was, look, a third party. Just my conscience says a third party. Anything but the donkey elephant game. I'm going third party to send a message. I'm out here. I'm an independent. Well, I voted independent. And then ultimately I switched over to libertarian. I found a home. And by the way, as an update, I just got an email Thursday from the Libertarians, which IR1, 500 candidates. I know Chris has talked about that. They're on the ballot, which obviously is more than any other third party. He's in all 50 states. He prevailed in Pennsylvania. The judge ruled, yeah, he's got enough signatures. He's going to stay on the ballot. Other states had this battle because the Republicans are afraid of him. Well, anyway, the Republicans responded, since they lost, well, we're going to appeal it. Oh, really? You want to appeal it when the numbers, I mean, this is simple math. How do you appeal simple math? 1, 2, 3, 4. The number of required signatures, he's legitimate. Math is either right or wrong. It's like, come on, folks. But they had to appeal it. They are afraid of the libertarians. And Peter Johnson has also initiated a lawsuit to get him on the debates. And I was talking with David Callahan, Tools for Justice, great man. We were talking about this, and he said, well, there's a law passed that they don't allow any other party to be on the debates unless it's a 15% in the polls. My what? He said, yeah. Well, who passed that law? Oh, that's right, the Republicans and the Democrats. But, you know, sometimes they do work together in Congress. Am I painting a picture here of what's really going on? And, by the way, there happened to be a difference between twin brothers. Many of us have known twin brothers or twin sisters. Romney and Obama, twin brothers, twin sisters. They both support the NDAA. Obama called it indefinite detention. Romney called it indefinite incarceration. They both got funded by the following, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and J.P. Morgan Chase. Those are the banksters. And the difference there was, well, when you add up the total funding, it's a little bit different in money. So you see, there is differences. One of them believed in the state-run health care, the other national health care. Another one believed in Acorn to get him elected, and the other one believed in going state by state, you know, like switching the votes from, like, say, Ohio. There's documentation and analysis electronically switched to Ohio. Should have went to Santorum. And let's see, what else did Romney do? Well, that's right, he broke Henry Herford's bones. He arrested people, not he, but the Republican Party. And because these grassroots people were getting in the position of becoming county, district, and state delegates in favor of mostly Ron Paul, just cheating games here and there, and then they decided to pass, I think it was Rule 11, that the RNC can just kick off delegates from the grassroots whenever you want. I got Republican friends. I think they're going to fix the party from within. How do you do that when they've already done this? A lawsuit happened, and they're still doing it. How are you going to fix the Republican Party within when they made rules to shut down your delegates? I guess I don't understand. I'm just, you know, but there is a difference between Romney and Obama. Obama, he hates conservatives. Romney, he dislikes them. You know, he dislikes from the way he treated Gingrich and Santorum. And Ron Paul, he just dislikes him. Do you see the difference there in the twin brothers? I'm trying to be humorous and at the same time point out this is like, please, come to the Libertarians. And as another option, you know, a third party. I mean, I hope people vote third party, Constitution, American Party. God bless you. Do it, please. Just get out of the elephant donkey game. But with the Libertarian Party, in a couple of years, here's some simple math, okay? It's not hard to go to the National Convention in 2 years. If we get 80 people, all right, I'm sure you got more than 80 listeners, 80 people there, we can change the platform slightly for state sovereignty and take the social issues out of the elephant donkey game. It's a very powerful technique. We don't have to take over the party. We don't want to do that because they're our allies. We just clarified this, and we will attract huge numbers from the fallout of both parties.
Would either Rex just want to chime in on that, and then we're going to let in 903, which I believe is Mary.
Go ahead. Do your calls.
Oh, okay. You good, Rex?
Yeah, go for it. Go for the callers.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, all right, Kelly, I'm going to keep your mic open, and then I'm going to have in, because it's 10:35, so I'm going to let in 903, which I believe is Mary.
Yes.
Is this Mary?
Yes, it is. Hi.
Hey, Mary. Thank you very much for calling in. And then
sure.
If those of you who are on hold, if you'd like to chime in, just press 1 on your phone and let me know if you want to chime in. If you called in just to listen, of course, that is fine, too. So go ahead, Mary.
Well,
thank you
for calling
again.
Two things I wanted to ask about. And one was, you know, my concern is that at least like in Texas where I am, that we have early voting, and that starts October the 22nd. Well, the debate with, you know, Johnson and Good, and there's four of them, I believe. I wanted y'all to elaborate on the debate that's going to be on the 23rd. And the main reason I wanted you to elaborate on that is because I hope that everyone will wait until after the debates and do a little bit more research before they vote. But is the platform that they're going to be following for that debate going to be very similar to the debate between the Republican candidate and, you know, Obama and Romney? Do y'all know?
I suspect it'll be similar.
I don't believe Obama or Romney's going to be on there. They may, but...
No, they won't be there.
I doubt. Yeah.
But it'll be a similar format. I mean, do y'all know more about it or no?
Well, I'm not sure of the format. I don't know that they're going to necessarily, you know, give us that. But I suspect it'll be something similar. But I think they're going to give them an opportunity to, you know, state their case. This isn't designed to make them look like fools. I think this is a genuine debate. So I think we're going to see something pretty exciting. The question is, will people actually tune in? Who knows? I mean, it's not going to be promoted by the media, so it's kind of up to us. So you got to get the debate out on
Twitter,
Facebook, make flyers, talk to people, but get them to just look at it. And the other thing is just remind people, absentee and early voting is for a very specific reason. It is because you will be unable to be at the polling place on election day because maybe you're serving overseas or your business takes you out of town or something like that. Other than that, voting early is not for convenience's sake. Voting is not supposed to be convenient. This is an important thing to do. It's a duty and a privilege, so you don't just do it out of convenience. And why would you, with the rapid change in the world today, globally, economically, and these morons opening their mouths and sticking their feet into it every 5 seconds, why would you want to go ahead and cast your vote before November when you don't know what might happen? And for example, we know for a fact that Romney's done a lot of illegal stuff, and so has Obama. So I suspect strongly that Obama's not going to be touched for any of the stuff that he's done. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be too surprised if Romney doesn't get nailed, in which case, what are you going to do if you've already voted for him?
Well, you know they're going
to
push it. They're going to push it, and they'll be – when they're I've heard them on their campaigns. They've been pushing about, voting starts in less than 10 days. And so they're pushing people to go ahead
mm-hmm.
and vote. So I agree with you totally. I think that people really should wait till the end. I usually don't. I usually vote early. But I'm not this time. I'm going to definitely vote on Election Day, and I'm going to for that reason because of all that's going on. But also I think everyone should do a lot more research on all these third parties, and I think they should go on to their individual states and check their voting rules and see what they say about these third-party candidates because, like, I went on Texas and, thinking that Ron Paul would be able to be, you know, someone you could write in. Well, you can't. And I don't even know if all the Ron Paul people know that. I mean, it says specifically they have to be certified, and he's not on that list. And so if someone in Texas votes for Ron Paul, which I know a lot of them want to, and I mean, unless something happens with the case that Gilbert's fighting for right now for the write-ins, I mean, but if they go ahead and, you know, write his name in, it's just going to be tossed. It'll just be wasted when they could actually vote for someone like Scoot or Johnson or
right.
you know, one of the other
ones. Can I throw something out about that?
Yeah.
Sure, go ahead. And then go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
Yeah. In Maine, Ron Paul won the delegates. Of course, they kind of dismissed him at the national convention. Just kind of, you know, just Republican something, something. Anyway, he has signed up to be a write-in candidate in Maine, and it could be a surprise that he wins one state in general election. That would be pleasant because it's going to break the two-party system. Also, a couple more quick points, and I got to get to a conference call that they're begging me to get on. A couple other points. The Republicans are now in serious trouble in Florida. I remember the Democrats and Acorn, all that was a mess. Well, the district attorneys are getting involved now in Florida because the Republicans spent like $3 million to register a whole bunch of people in Florida, swing state. And, well, they're throwing Democrat votes away. They're playing games. And not just one, but a couple other counties are looking at the election fraud, which I'm glad for, that finally somebody's doing something. Third point. When you watch, and I can't wait to watch this debate between Good and Gary Johnson, because I am going to be so refreshed, like, wow, I like this, or wow, I like that. And I've already overcome my paradigm shift when I watched the same at the Libertarian National Convention when I saw two libertarians debate. I'm like, wow, this guy is great, and that guy's great. Oh, wait, I feel something weird. I feel something really strange. Where's the feeling of guilt? There was none. The guilt of, I have to vote for the lesser of two evils, that feeling was gone. And it's going to be so refreshing to watch Gary Johnson and Good debate.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Wait.
I mean, I hope everyone will tune in, and I hope that there is some kind of publicity about it so people know about it and that everybody will Twitter
correct.
It and Facebook. And but I hope there's some other kind of coverage, too, you know, in the national media, so anyway.
And thank you, Mayor. I appreciate that. And we're going to move on to the next caller. And
thanks, guys. I got
to
go.
Okay, thanks, Kelly. I appreciate you very much coming in tonight and giving us some of your time. And he's going to his conference, and I put a link to his website in the chat, www.hiddenforthbranch.com. It's not just to his book. It is also to his website, talking a lot about the federal grand jury. So at this time, I am going to bring in 2-1. Well, wait a minute. No, 214, you will be next. But first, we will be bringing in Samuel Sanford, who has the show Constitutional Conservatives Unite here on Blog Talk Radio. So I'm going to let him in, and then after Sammy, it will be 214, because I know Sammy's got his show he's got to get ready for. So without further ado, thank you, Sammy, very much for calling in.
Hello, Robert. How you doing
Hello,
tonight?
Sammy. Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. excuse me.
But, I mean,
we got a great show here.
The funny thing about everything is we are being attacked because we stand up for constitutional conservatism. I mean, it blows my mind how these little, small-minded people would think voting for Mitt Romney is the same as voting for Barack Obama. Are voting... If we vote against Mitt Romney, we are voting for Barack Obama. These are small-minded people. They have no balls. They have no convention, no morals whatsoever. And I am sorry. I will not vote for Mitt Romney. I will not support him. Neither would I support Barack Hussein Obama.
I don't know why you're sorry about that, Sammy.
Well, no. I'm sorry that people like you, Rex, and Tex, Robert, and I are being attacked. I mean, they're coming out at us like whatever, they can go kiss my friggin' butt.
Well, Sammy, I think you know this as a military man, but if you ain't taking flak, you're not over the target. So all I can say to that is bring it on.
And that's the reason I'm going to keep on fighting. And that's the reason I'm here on Robert's show. And I've talked with you, Rex, today, and I've talked with Robert. We are not shutting up, and we are not backing down. Screw them. They can go rot their little butts in hell. If they do not want to stand up for the Constitution and the U.S. Bill of Rights, which they are not doing. I mean, I am fired up. Plain and simple. But here, Robert, I'm going to throw it back to you. I'm just pissed off right now.
Well, thank you very much for calling in, Sammy. And, of course, folks, in about 15 minutes, Sammy's show, Constitutional Conservatives Unite, will be on. And so if anyone can go and check it out tonight, if you are new to Blog Talk Radio or these shows, I recommend it for people to go over there and check it out. Thank you very much, Sammy, for calling in.
Okay.
And at this time, I do have a couple folks on hold. We'll open up the mics and see if you'd like to chat. If you just want to listen, just let us know if you just called in to listen, and I will go to the person who's been on hold the most, and this is a Skype caller. So just for the people who I do not recognize the calls, I just have two rules. One, no profanity, and also, two, be respectful to everyone that is on the line. So I will open up the mic, and if you just want to just listen in, then do so. If not, go ahead and tell us what's on your mind. So this is the Skype caller.
Yeah, this is constitutionally correct. Randy, the constitutional evangelist, Stufflebeam.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure. So go ahead. Tell us what's on your mind.
No, you guys go ahead. You got other things. I'm just happy to listen. I've spent many nights here on Blog Talk Radio for the past week or so talking with you guys, and I really appreciate the time. I really appreciate what I'm hearing. You know, Rex has made some awesome statements about the destruction of the two-party duopoly and all. And here I go ranting, and I said I wasn't going to, but
Now you have a Blog Talk Radio show yourself, correct?
Oh, yeah, I've got my own constitutionally correct show. And, you know, having listened to you guys' show, I'm really thinking about, you know, what I've been doing with my show and that sort of thing, because not only is my show actually just on Blog Talk, but it's being rebroadcast on Liberty Works Radio Network, and that's also being rebroadcast on, I think it's somewhere between 5 and 6 other radio stations are beginning to pick it up now.
Well, that's great. So when is your Blog Talk Radio show on? What evening?
Well, that's part of the deal. I have not had a real consistent time. It's just pretty much been when I've had some guests come on. I've just been kind of been real flexible about doing it at their convenience.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've interviewed Jerome Corsi, DV Kid, G. Edward Griffin. Some of you recognize that as the author of the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, and others. And I've done that at their convenience. And so mostly what you're going to have is just you can go through the archives and also on my website. But I'm really thinking about really starting to nail down a consistent time and really starting to do a real consistent show. You guys have inspired me, and I really appreciate all that you're doing.
Well, I appreciate that. And feel free, if you're in the chat, if you want to put a link for people to check out. I'm assuming you have archives. If you want to do that for people to listen to your archives, you're more than welcome to put the link in the chat. So go
and
ahead.
What I'm thinking about doing this coming week, normally I do this at 9 o'clock Central, 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock Eastern time, and that kind of interferes a little bit with you guys' show. I'm really thinking about maybe my next show, bringing Virgil, Jim Clymer, my co-host, the Fluffy Bunny. I'll tell you all about that later. But bringing you all on board and just having a real big hoo-ha on a show.
I know I would have liked that, and I can't speak for Rex or Chris, but they could chime in on that themselves, guys. Go ahead. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's great. We can talk about it later. We're down to the wire here.
Yep. So I'll cut off. I'll cut out of here. But thanks. We'll get together on that.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be really awesome. Okay. Well, we do have one more folk on here, and I will open up their mic to see if they'd like to chime in. And if not, that's fine. Just want to listen as well. Because we do only have 10 minutes, so I'll only be allowed I'll only allow about 5 minutes here. I apologize. So 910, your mic is live, and would you like to chime in? You're just listening in tonight.
Actually, I was just listening in tonight.
No problem. Okay, well, thank you very much for calling in. I will proceed to close your mic for you. And there you go. Thank you very much for coming to the show. And so what I would like to do at this time is just open things up to Rex or Chris. If there's anything you guys would like to chime in about as we close for the next 4 minutes.
You want to go, Rex? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I think Chris should wrap up. I just want to say, you know, thanks for the kind words. I'm not one to give any praises or kudos for, because nothing I say is anything I came up with. I just read a lot, and I recommend you all read a lot too. And there's a lot of good stuff to read. You can read things by, the guys that wrote the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers. Read stuff by the Austrian economists like Ludwig von Mises and those guys. You can check them out at Mises.org. The Acton Institute is also another great place to go and learn, the 10th Amendment Center. I mean, the fact is that you have the power. You just don't know it. So learn about it, because nothing that I'm saying is something I came up with. I'm just repeating stuff I read. To you, Chris.
Okay, buddy. All right, so there's two things I want to blast through as fast as possible just to save time. One is the ballot access concept and voting. And I've talked about this before, but it should be talked about again. And we can use Ohio as an example, where Romney's down, 8, 9, 10 per points, and probably going to lose Ohio anyway. So if you are, pro-building, if you're – I'm just going to use Constitution Party as an example, okay? So – let's say you're into this thing. I want to support this party. I want to vote for Virgil Good. Okay, so if you get to work and rally people and get this guy to get 5% or more of the vote in Ohio, their whole world changes. Their ballot access changes, so they don't have to run around and get a bunch of signatures. It makes it easier for them to get on ballots. It makes it easier to run multiple candidates. It changes their world. So if you want to support a party in a state in a situation like that, then by all means, make it happen, because it will change the future of that party. And so there's a lot of things that you have to think about in terms of total strategy. One is I'm trying to, can I block Obama, who has 335-40 electors right now? And how can I do that? That's talking to all my Democrat friends, get them to vote Johnson, get them to vote Stein, the Green Party, but in states where Romney's already lost or losing, or a blue state like I live in, then my goal is to focus on helping the party, get ballot access for the future. So that's another strategy, to throw in there, not to overcomplicate things. So that's one. Second thing is, what do we do now? We're right now. I have a doc that I've been working on, and it's a very complex situation trying to figure out in all the write-in states exactly how it's all done, and what's paper, what's scanner, what's machine, and actually if you take one state and you do the research on it, in different counties it's different. So it's extremely complex to find out exactly what does it mean to be a write-in candidate, because some states where you have to pre-register to be a write-in candidate, you're actually on the ballot. In other states, you're not. In some states, you're on the machine, your name. In other states, you have to type it in. So it's such a complex, and then it may vary by county. So it is kind of a complex thing. So, if you've picked a candidate and you want to go out and support that candidate and you want to, get out the vote for them, you're going to have to get the details for your state. We're trying to put that together on the group, on that document, but it's becoming a data nightmare, to be honest with you. So there's a couple links at the top of that document. One of them, actually, if you click on it and you go down to the red map or the multicolor map and you click on it, you can actually click on the state, and it brings up the whole state and all the counties, and then it's color-coded to show you what ballot machines they use. So, I mean, it's an awesome resource. And then there's another one.
Hey,
there's
Chris,
another link.
When you get a shot, if you could put the link in the chat if you have not
already.
Yeah,
I will do that.
Awesome.
Sure, I'll do that. And then the other link at the top of that doc, and this is the strategy doc or the state-by-state ballot access doc, there's another link that you go in and you reach over to the right and you click and you can change states, and it shows you all the sample ballots for that state. So those two resources some people found for me today are awesome. And then you're going to have to, you know, get out and make it happen. So back to this concept of strategy, you know, I mean, it's almost at a point now where, you know, talk's cheap. You know, the people on the end of this radio, if this is the choice that you've made, you know, some people are going to choose to vote for Romney, some people are going to choose to vote for Obama, some people are going to choose to stay home, whatever. I'm not telling you what to do, but for those who have chosen, saying this is my candidate and I want to go to war for my candidate in my state or my county, and you've got your resources and your friends, it's going to be a matter of flyers, emails, putting the information together, making it simple for people, especially in a write-in situation. You need to have that information on there, access to the links, to the sites, to the groups, taking these blog talk radio archives, which and a lot of people always ask me, where's the link to the archive? I go, it's the same link you clicked on to come to this show. That then becomes the archive link. You can take that link, paste it on an email, and say, you need to listen to this guy. And I always tell people that the best way to promote is to first ask questions. Are you happy with the options that you have? Are you happy with an Obama-Romney choice? Yes or no? Yes, I'm happy. Great. You're not going to convince them unless they say, no, I'm not happy. If they say, no, I'm not happy, say, would you like to know there's another option out there? Or do you know there's another option out there? No. What are you talking about? Okay, well, let me explain this to you. If you're calm, cool, and collected, people will listen to you. If you beat them over the head with your candidate or your party or your Bible, they will not listen to you. Nobody likes to be told what to do. We are Americans. You have to educate people. But before you can educate people, you need to ask them if they want to be educated. It's an important factor in anybody's ever studied professional salesmanship. So those are some things that you need to do, and I'll pass it over to Rex to tag on that, and then we're going to be out of time after Rex is done.
Yeah, because we only got about less than 2 minutes of live time. If you would like to do that, Rex, or tell the folks about your show for tomorrow, that would be great.
Did Rex?
Sure. No, I'm here. I wasn't expecting to chime in, but I can always come up with something. But, Tex and Rex show starting tomorrow, October 1st, will be broadcasting live on Mondays and Tuesdays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern, right before and leading into Bard's Logic Political Talk. So check us out on Blog Talk Radio, Tex and Rex, and please follow the show and follow Roberts as well, and join us on Sammy's. The thing to take away from all this is that you have the power, you just don't know how to use it. Quit letting them bully you and use fear to intimidate you, and realize that we can win this. And when I say win this, I'm not merely talking about one office, the President of the United States. I'm talking about we can win this and restore constitutional government so that we can live our lives unmolested by faraway tyrants who seek to do nothing but subjugate us, and our local communities can thrive, and we can once again be a free and virtuous society. To you, Robert.
Well, thank you very much, Rex, Chris, Kelly, for coming in, and you too, Mary, and everyone else, Gene, and Sammy, and other folks such as from the Constitutionally Correct, and please check them out. But at this time, I'd like to bid everyone adieu. Have a good night. Take care, and hope to see you again, and I will close out every night tonight, as I do every night, with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. Good night and take care.